1911 brings us in our virtual pilgrimage to the cathedral at Old Loughlin, St. Clisarian's, the most ancient, still working building in County Carlow. A place of extraordinary spiritual beauty, of ecumenical significance, I think, of how each year and St. Mullish's Day, people of many traditions gather in the cathedral and also visit the well just up the field beyond it. But I suppose I think particularly of how much artistic enrichment has happened in that cathedral in recent years, which shows how it forever travels on, notwithstanding its ancient character, how it ever travels on in engaging with the world we're in and harnessing the artistic gifts of that world. And so it is that there's been a new icon of St. Clisarian written, a new organ provided, wonderful work on the ancient Lady Chapel to restore it and to make it a place of hospitality and of meeting. We give thanks and pray for all those who have made St. Clisarian's Cathedral, nestling so quietly in the countryside, yet so close to the busy motorway, how they've made it a place of imagination and spiritual energy, and another splendid thing we experienced in recent years was the pilgrimage along the Barrow when the relic of St. Willibrord, a gift of the Roman Catholic Church in Luxembourg, was brought from Willibrord's burial place at Eshternaut there via Old Loughlin and up the Barrow to the Roman Catholic Cathedral in Carlow. And it was a shared celebration of how Carlow, the area at Carlow, had done so much to educate and form a monk who became very much the apostle of the Low Countries. But back to 1911, the year with which we are concerned. I mentioned some time ago the formation of local authorities in Ireland, and in 1911 women became full members of county councils. Previously it had been limited to things like town commissions. But on the much wider political stage at Westminster, the Parliament Act was passed. And this at last deprived the House of Lords of its capacity to veto legislation. Its powers became limited to a temporary veto of 2 years, but if a piece of legislation was passed in a third successive year in the House of Commons, then the Lords could no longer obstruct it. And therefore, at last, the way to the enacting of Home Rule for Ireland appeared clear. It was really only passed the Parliament Act in the House of Lords itself, which of course had to pass it, because the King threatened to create sufficient peers to get it through if those who were already there continued to obstruct it. So the way to Home Rule at last appeared clear, and once again Home Rule legislation was to be introduced in 1912. But events would overtake its enactment. Its bringing into effect would be shelved during the war. Meanwhile, the Easter Rising and the response to it would change the atmosphere. It would become clear that Home Rule couldn't be implemented either without an opt-out for Ulster, and in the South, Home Rule ceased to be enough. In short, the facilitation of Home Rule legislation in the second decade of the 20th century was sadly perhaps too little, too late. We're on the cusp of the Ireland we know, partitioned, with most of the country wanting more than Home Rule. If only, as we mused when we were considering the year 1886, if only Gladstone had pulled it off then. It's an interesting point, however, how the Parliament managed to reform itself through the Parliament Act of 1911. The Turkeys, to use that vulgarism, voted for Christmas. The Lords knew they could no longer provide a permanent veto against the elected House, and themselves were willing to enact legislation that limited their power thereafter. It's very important for legislative bodies to be able from time to time to reform themselves, even if it's costly, particularly to current office holders. For if parliamentary bodies cannot reform themselves, the only other way to achieve reform is by the equivalent of revolution. And it's interesting that our General Synod at present, which needs to adjust the geographical balance of its representation and to consider how the historic manner in which, as it were, the diocesan constituencies are divided up, it realises that that needs review, and the existing synod needs to have the courage to reform itself in order to avoid frustration and even anger within the church. And it is interesting that the existing synod has been clearly showing itself realistic enough and courageous enough to implement its own reform. It's just a pity it didn't get on and do it this present year because there was no public meeting of the General Synod, but no doubt it will come in the next triennium.